You're tuned to the Curb Your Dogma podcast. And now, here is your dangerously underqualified host, Dr. Maury Robertson.
If you've lived long enough, you've certainly developed reasons not to trust God. Maybe you don't even believe in God. I'll tell you Walker's story of disgust with God in today's episode, The Void. Welcome, my friend, to Curb Your Dogma, where we leave the beaten path to follow Christ. And boy, does that tagline ever resonate with me. Not only in terms of just this freedom I feel now to think new in fresh ways about Christ and to look at things with fresh eyes, I also feel like God is constantly stretching me. I was laughing with Julie that the book that just came out, Hard Reset, about the time I got it written and finished, I told her, you know what? I think I'm about ready to write a book now. But it's too late. It's already out there. The point is, you can't wait until you're ready to do something to do it. You kind of just got to do it and learn to do it as you do it. And yes, the output may not be perfect, but you got to learn on the fly or you'll never learn to fly. Ooh, I like that. You got to learn on the fly or you'll never learn to fly. Imagine this. You're bored one night, so you turn to the television and you start this movie, and it's not a very good story. In fact, it's boring. It just goes around and around, and there's violence, and there's betrayal, and there's good, happy stuff, but it has no point, and it just goes around and around, and it's going nowhere. And so you try to change the channel, but you can't. And you try harder to change the channel, and it just won't change. And then, to your utter dismay, you realize you're the main character in this story. This is the story of your life, and you can't escape. Now, that's kind of weird, but honestly, I think that's where many people live today. In fact, I think that's where nearly everybody lives today. We're in this life, you know, but it doesn't really make sense. It has some good parts and some bad parts, but it's not going anywhere. It's a story with no plot. Now imagine yourself in a very different story. You turn on the television and it's the best story you've ever seen. It has everything. It has romance. It has betrayal. It has dastardly deeds and heroes and villains. It has tragedy. It has comedy. It's rich. And it, most of all, it has a plot. It's moving somewhere. The character is developing and growing. And you sense that it's going toward this amazing ending that you can only imagine, but you can anticipate already as you watch this story. That's the life Christ came to give. And it's not so much that Jesus came to make all of the events in your life this happy, happy thing. What Christ preached and taught was a framework in which life mattered, a story with a plot. That's what he gave to people. That's what I've tried to capture in his seven core teachings, the seven anchor points. And we'll be spending an entire week on each anchor point over the next 7 weeks. Now here's the place where I'm leaving the beaten path again, and I felt shoved into this by God, and I don't appreciate it. but here's the thing. A friend listening to my stuff said, basically, Maury, your stuff is conceptual. You tell principles. You look at ideas, and you share ideas and thoughts, and yeah, I mean, that's what I do. But his point was that those don't really penetrate people. They don't change lives. They may be true, they may be beautiful, but they're sterile. You need to learn to tell stories. And I really was impressed on this. Actually, in the middle of the night, God just said to me, you've got to learn to tell the anchor points as a story. And I said, I don't know how to write a story. I'm not a writer. I'm a theologian. I do principles. But what popped back in my mind was, better a bad story than a beautiful manual. So, I'm going to write a bad story. It's a story of Walker and the journey he went through as these seven core teachings of Jesus began to transform his life. Now, I just need to confess to you, I don't know how to write a story, so I beg you to indulge me. Not only that, but I'm writing this on the fly. If you want to know how it ends, I can't tell you because I don't know yet. I'm making this up as I go along. I'm certain that I will go back one day and improve it. But here's the reason I'm going ahead with this story, even though I'm not ready to write a story and the story hasn't been outlined well or anything. It's because my story that I tell about Walker, that's not the one that matters. What matters is your story. This week's podcast and the anchor points that go with it each day are designed to help you tell your story. It's not about Walker, it's about you. I invite you to go to anchorpoint.org and sign up for the daily devotionals that go along with this podcast. Because you see, what you need is not just some solution to some problem in your life. What you need is a framework in which all of your life matters, the good and the bad. I love something I read this week by Proust. He said, "The only true voyage of discovery would be not to visit strange lands, but to possess new eyes." That is exactly what Christ wants to give you. And that is my prayer for you, that you will hear the living voice of Jesus Christ, and that you will learn the story that gives meaning to your life, what Jesus called the kingdom of God. So here we go. Chapter 1, The Void. Walker's hands squeezed the steering wheel as if the pressure would make the light turn green. His wife Connie sat beside him in the passenger seat, staring blankly ahead. 20 minutes ago, they'd been happily eating Chinese food, discussing what color to repaint the guest room. Connie's phone had buzzed. Unidentified number. She ignored it. "I like browns and greens," said Walker. "I don't want it to look too girly." The phone buzzed a second time. The caller had left a message. "Agreed," said Connie, casually placing the phone to her ear. "I want something warm, too, but not dark. Darkness can be..." The blood drained from her face, and she trailed off mid-sentence. "Who is it?" asked Walker. "Shh," she said with unexpected intensity. She finished listening and slowly placed the phone on the table. "It was the police. Lizzie's been in a car accident. She's in an ambulance on the way to the emergency room right now." "What happened?" "They didn't say. Only that it's serious and we need to get there as soon as we can." They made their way quickly out the door, shoving a wad of cash in the hands of their puzzled waitress. The emergency room looked like a scene from MASH. Wounded people filled every chair. Some leaned against the walls. "My God," thought Walker, "when did this become a third world country?" A sign over the triage nurse's desk said, "Start here." 7 people stood in line. Walker ignored the line and stepped to the desk. "Hi, I'm Walker Adams. My daughter Lizzie's been in a car accident. Is she here?" The nurse didn't even look up. "Sorry, sir, you'll have to wait your turn." "But my daughter's been in a serious accident. Is the ambulance here?" The nurse looked up blankly. "You'll have to wait your turn." Walker and Lizzie went to the end of the line. Lizzie stared at her phone, her thumbs fumbling instinctively with her Facebook page. On the way to the hospital, she had posted a prayer request. The digital well-wishers were flooding in. "Wow," she said. 247 likes and praying for yous in less than 10 minutes. This has to be a record. Walker wasn't surprised. Everyone loved Lizzie. He was glad Connie had made it clear they wanted no visitors. An elderly Hmong man with bad teeth and a kind face said, "Why don't you go ahead of me?" "Thank you," Lizzie replied. The depth of her gratitude was felt all the way to the front of the line. One by one, each person motioned them forward until they stood face to face with the triage nurse again. "I'm Walker Adams. My daughter Elizabeth Adams has been in a serious car accident. Is she here?" "Nope, not yet," said the nurse, staring at a computer screen. "Do you know when she will be?" "It doesn't say," she said, still staring at the screen. "She's coming by ambulance, so it should be soon. Why don't you go over there and get started on the paperwork?" She motioned to a sign across the room that said, "Admitting." There were 4 windows, one of which was manned. People waited in plastic chairs like at the DMV. As Walker made his way across the room, his heart sank. 3 weeks ago, he had quit his job at the local hardware store. They couldn't compete when the Home Depot and Lowe's moved into town and had to cut his salary. Walker's credit was stretched thin and he had to have benefits, so he reluctantly joined the enemy. His job at the Home Depot had begun 2 weeks ago. His family health insurance was in limbo. He wasn't even sure he had any. Sirens penetrated the emergency room windows. An ambulance had arrived. Walker and Connie jostled their way out the door just in time to see Lizzie's bandaged head disappear into the ER on a gurney. Walker went back inside and cut to the front of the line. He pounded the desk, looked the nurse in the eye, and said, "I have to see my daughter." Without looking up, she took a visitor's sticker from a pile and handed it to him. "One at a time. It's packed in there." Connie looked at Walker pleadingly. "You go, honey," he said, handing her the sticker. She put it on her blouse and disappeared through swinging doors with a large red "No Admittance" sign. Walker spotted an empty chair and wedged himself between a mother with a red-nosed baby and an elderly woman. He knew he should pray, but the very idea made him furious. He started to think about his insurance. He hated his new job. Actually, he didn't like his old job either. He'd been depressed for several years. People said he was having a midlife crisis. He knew they were wrong. This was not a passing phase that would be solved by time. In fact, time was making things worse. Every chapter of life promised something around the corner. In high school, it was college. In college, it was marriage. In marriage, it was kids. Now it was grandkids and retirement. Around every corner was another corner. He was running out of corners. He woke up every morning with a painful emptiness. It became so predictable that he named it. He called it the void and joked about it with Connie. "How's the void today?" she would ask him at breakfast. He would smile and laugh, but it wasn't funny. In church, they called it the God-shaped vacuum. He was well acquainted with the vacuum. The problem was, God never bothered to fill his. They assured him he would go to heaven when he died. That gave him a reason to die. He was looking for a reason to live. No one had an answer for the void. They dealt with it by trying not to think about it. They stayed busy. They ate. They remodeled the house. They had an affair. They moved to the next town. They kept looking around the next corner. When that didn't work, they drank. Now Walker had come around a corner and found his daughter bleeding there. What was the point? All he knew for sure was that life was absurd, and he loved Lizzie. He looked at the clock. It had been 45 minutes. What was taking so long? Ignoring the nurse, he got up and barged through the no admittance doors. Thousands of beeping monitors made it sound like a video arcade. Nurses were rushing from patient to patient, plugging in tubes and pushing buttons on screens. Gurneys with patients on them were strewn up and down the halls like abandoned cars. Lizzie lay on one of them, her eyes shut. "The rooms are full," said Connie. "We're waiting for a doctor." "How did you get in?" "Don't ask," he said. They stood by Lizzie's gurney, trying to avoid the stream of traffic moving up and down the hall. Walker saw Lizzie's face for the first time and swallowed hard. Her eyes were two dark purple bruises. Her nose was broken, and the left side of her face was badly cut. He tried not to imagine what was underneath the bandages. Lizzie's eyes opened, and she looked up slowly. She scanned Walker's face as if trying to make sense of it. Her eyes drifted slowly over to Connie. "Mommy? Daddy?" "Yes, dear," said Connie, fighting for composure. "You've been in an accident. We're here." Lizzie smiled weakly and drifted back off. Finally, the doctor arrived. "I'm Dr. Phillips," he said, extending his hand briskly. He examined Lizzie briefly and turned to Connie and Walker. "The good news is that she still has movement in all her limbs. She took quite a blow to the head. From what I understand, it's a miracle she's still alive. I'm ordering a CT scan so we can find out how extensive the damage is." Two orderlies arrived and whisked Lizzie away. As Walker and Connie made their way back to the waiting area, they recognized one of the paramedics who had brought Lizzie in the ambulance. They pumped him for information. "We picked up your daughter at the intersection of Highways 99 and 20, he said. "She was headed west on 20 when a guy with a big pickup ran a red light at 60 miles an hour. He hit her broadside. You should see your minivan. It's a miracle she's alive." "So we heard," said Walker. "How's the other guy?" "Oh, he's fine. It was a big truck, an F-250, I think. His airbag went off. All he had were a few scrapes. One of his friends came. I think he went home." "Thanks," said Walker. "I hope she's all right," said the paramedic. "Seems like it always goes this way. The people who cause the accidents are never the ones who get hurt." An hour later, Dr. Phillips stuck his head through the doors. "Adams," he said. "Here," said Connie and Walker in unison. "Come with me." They followed Dr. Phillips into a small consultation room where he showed them images of Lizzie's head on a computer screen. "She's had a traumatic brain injury. There's been serious damage." "How serious?" asked Connie. serious. Her head bounced off the driver's side window. It gave her brain a serious jolt. The good news is that her skull remained intact and her vital signs are good. The greatest danger now is swelling. We'll monitor her closely for the next few days. She really belongs in our neuroscience ICU, but the beds are filled. Tonight, we'll watch her in the ER.
Isn't there anything else that can be done? Asked Connie.
Not now. Tomorrow, if she's up to it, I'll order more tests so we can get a better idea of what's going on. The best thing you can do is go home and get some sleep. This could be a long process.
Will she live? Asked Connie in a whisper.
I can't make any promises, said Dr. Phillips. Like I said, these cases are hard to predict, but chances are good. When they returned to the waiting room, they were relieved to discover that Lizzie had been put in a room. They were allowed to sit with her. Wires ran from every part of her body, connected to an array of beeping machines. They sat down. Connie made phone calls and updated her Facebook page. Walker sat in silence. At midnight, he looked over at Connie. You need to get some rest. I'll stay here tonight. In the morning, you can come and take my place. Reluctantly, Connie went home. The visitors' chairs were not designed for sleeping. They were far too upright. Besides that, they were hard. He couldn't have slept anyway. Why did everything in the room have to beep? He was trying to process the day's events when Lizzie's eyes opened for a second time. This time she looked at him clearly. Hi, Daddy. Hi, beautiful. I love you. I love you, too. Why is this happening to me? Silence filled the room.
I don't know, he said. God must have a reason.
She stared at him for a few seconds, then drifted back to sleep.
God must have a reason. Ha!
He hated the words even as they came out of his mouth. It was a reflex, like saying fine when people ask you how you are. But what was he supposed to say? Life's a crapshoot, honey. We roll a dice. Some people get lucky and some don't. Guess you're not one of the lucky ones. Sorry about that.
Lizzie was an angel. What kind of God mutilates angels?
He knew the answer. It was Adam and Eve's fault. But who made Adam and Eve and that apple and the tree and the rules? Even if they had done some horrifying thing by eating an apple, how did it make sense for God to torture Lizzie thousands of years later? Walker could face his own void, but this, never. He realized why the idea of praying had made him so mad. If God was loving, if God was caring, this would not have happened in the first place. If God could make a universe, surely he could have made some punk look up from his cell phone. Maybe God didn't bother to monitor things like that. Maybe God didn't care. Maybe there was no God. Maybe God was a monster. Whatever the reason, there was no use talking to him. A nurse startled him from his trance.
Would you like a blanket?
Yes, thanks. He covered himself and drifted off. It was 3 a.m. 2 hours later, he felt a tap on his shoulder. It was Connie.
How is she?
Same.
How are you?
Fine. Connie hugged him. You need some sleep. Go home and try to rest.
Okay.
He wandered out to the car and got behind the wheel. He flashed to the thousands of times he had sat behind the wheel with Lizzie in the back seat, taking her to a soccer match, the first day of school, sleepovers, volleyball games, trips to grandparents. He beat the steering wheel until it hurt his hand. Tears splashed down his face, and he cried out in agony, "My God, my God! Why have you forsaken me?" He was startled to find he was not alone. A voice had said the words along with him. Well, that's the end of chapter one, my friend. Remember that this story is not the really important one. Yours is. Go to anchorpoint.org to get the daily teachings that will help you to face your own void. The whole point is to help you escape from your story with no plot and enter the story that Christ told, the story of the kingdom of God, which is the true story. Godspeed, my friend. See you next week.
Dr. Robertson offers free daily inspiration. If you would like to receive it, go to anchorpoint.org and click Daily Anchor Points.